Welcome. We're on mute and ready to go in just about 30 seconds, I do hope. We're just firing up the video broadcast as we speak. And it is live. We're going to give everybody an opportunity to come online with the video broadcast. It takes just a few moments for some of the computers to connect. So we'll give them just a few more minutes to do that. Great to have you all with us tonight. And those of you with us on the video, we're going to give everyone just a few more moments. We're just seconds away from beginning tonight's broadcast. Well, I think we're ready. We'd like to welcome all of you tonight to our Tuesday night celebration of life. Each Tuesday night we meet and talk about one of the six qualities of an intentional creator. For the last 2 weeks we've been talking about the art of connection, how to step into someone's world and take down their walls of resistance, how to listen a little differently, and respect people. Create that safe place where there's no need for a wall so that we can be the recipients of cooperation and productivity and have a great relationship with those that we have an opportunity to visit with. It's been a great experience to do this. I think this is probably somewhere in the neighborhood. We're getting very close to doing our 100th broadcast. Isn't that interesting? Almost 2 years now we've been doing this. So good to have all of you with us tonight. And anybody who's here visiting with us, we welcome you. Want to make sure you have an opportunity to take one of the intentional creation assessments. If there's anything we can do to be of service, either I or one of our coaches will be willing to spend a few minutes with you to review those results so that you can get an idea of what habits of thinking might be showing up at some of those most inopportune times in our lives. As Og says, I've surrendered my free will. And we could rephrase that occasionally, sometimes more often than I'd like. I surrender my free will, my right to choose, to these years of accumulated habits. And the past deeds of my life have already marked out a path which threatens to imprison my future. The truth is that when we're dealing with self-improvement, we want to get to the thought level. What are our neural pathways doing? What is happening to us? When we're faced with a challenge, what's our instinctual reaction based on our habits of thinking? If we could become aware of these and manage them more effectively and eventually shift them, we will be able to find abundance and success much more quickly in our lives. So we want to be able to get to that level. So take the intentional creation assessment. Go to intentionalcreation.com and then give us a call. There's a number there you can call, and if you'd like, you can call Ramona and chat with her. And if I could fit you in my schedule, I would be happy to spend a few minutes with you and help you better understand those results. They're very sensitive, and sometimes we get misconceptions about what they mean, what the measurements mean, like grateful. Am I or am I not grateful? And all we're going to measure is when you put on the lenses of your current habits of thinking, what do these lenses want you to see? And what do they want to obscure from your vision? Now, we can all take these lenses off and be aware and alert and awake, step back from them, conscious. But sometimes life just comes at us so hard, we're just wearing these lenses and we're reacting based on these lenses. That's all we're doing, is measuring the lenses to see what happens when you're wearing them and then assist you in perhaps getting a new prescription. Well, tonight we're going to take on a topic that's one of my favorites. I got an email this afternoon from a private coaching client. We're going to be talking about this tomorrow. She says, Dave, what do I do with my dream boards? Because we're going to take on creation, the first half of creation. When we have something that we would like to create, bring into tangible reality, so that we can, if it's money, deposit it in a bank account. If it's a house, we can actually live in it. A car, we can actually drive it. A couch, we can actually sit on. Carpet, we can walk on. These tangible realities, we want to bring them into this existence in which we're in right now, tonight. Creation requires two different processes, both equally important, but very different. They occur in two different dimensions. The very first one is called mental creation. We go into our mind and get a clear vision of what needs to be created and how to create it. That's the first half. Then we come into tangible reality and we take the actions necessary to actually bring it into tangible fruition. Now, I know this is going to be a sensitive topic for some tonight, because there has been a belief, and it's been very pervasive for about the last decade, that somehow magically, if I can visualize something with enough intention, it will actually manifest. It will manifest in tangible reality. There's just enough of a kernel of truth in that for it to be attractive. The truth is that there is a tremendous power, force of creation, power greater than ourselves. I call that power God, that participates in the mental creation. And when we are in our mind, that power can, if we're doing it constructively, give us an inspired idea. Just write that down. Idea, impression, or solution to a problem. That's what that power manifests when we're vividly visualizing. Now, interestingly, we're built as human beings that when we receive one of these inspired ideas, if we were wired to a functional MRI, we would see parts of our brain light up that we normally don't use. We're built to receive these ideas. This is the way it's supposed to happen. And when we receive one of these and that part of our brain lights up, it ignites our passion. Then we bring that passion being defined as a willingness to suffer for something that we love, and in direct relationship to this vision, a willingness to do whatever is necessary in tangible reality to bring that vision into fruition, to bring it into tangible reality. I've seen it. I know it's possible. I know it's inspired. I've seen how to do it. And now I'm going to, in passion-driven action, actually create an intangible reality. So that power participates in the manifestation of an idea. Jack Canfield talks about this in the DVD, The Secret, a very popular DVD. He says that I got a $1 million idea in the shower. I know Jack well enough to know that that didn't just happen because he had the idea in the shower. He is a tenacious creator. Now, as with most intentional creators, when they get that vision, they take the action. It's not work to them. It's not work. They can work tirelessly, not effortlessly, but tirelessly in the creation of that inspired idea. And interestingly, sometimes, and Jack's an exclusion to this, but there are times when some of the well-known gurus on this topic forget to mention work. Because to them it's not work. And if it's not work, why talk about work? Work sounds like something that's boring and mundane and repetitious and burdensome. The work I'm talking about, the work of creation, is glorious and thrilling and exciting and noble. So we're going to spend our time tonight on the first half of creation, on this part we do in our mind with vivid visualization. Here's the next key. or just scribbling some notes on a piece of paper. Here's a key. 97%, just write that down on a piece of paper. I'm writing it down. 97% of those who are actively pursuing something better in their life, they want to have success, they want to have abundance, they want to do more with their life. 97% of those people, to a mathematical certainty, have a thought process, or I should say the thought process is associated with constant and obsessive thought, and vivid visualization are way over-focused. Way over-focused. Now, that's not a bad thing. It just comes with some inherent risk. The obsessive thought causes us to get really attached to our ideas. And we need to be right if we're attached to them, because they need to be right. These are called systemic thoughts. They process in all or nothing, right or wrong, life or death. Now, we can step back from these. They're hard to step back from, but we can step back from them and let them go, because when we need to be right, someone else needs to be wrong. And we're going to crush their self-esteem. That's a risk. At the same time, that very obsessive thought process, you give it a problem, it'll churn till it solves it. Oh, what a gift to an entrepreneur. The one about vivid visualization, I want to talk about it for a moment, because it's troubling. This particular thought process is so vivid in the lives of 97% of those attracted to wanting to create more of their life. Everyone is on the phone or on the video tonight. This is at the center of the challenge. This is a discovery we made, uniquely discovered in our research. 97% have this thought process that is so powerful, so over-focused, so vivid. And some people say, well, I don't see pictures. This isn't about seeing pictures. This is about driving your car down the road and you pull into a parking lot. Can't remember how you got there because your mind was somewhere else. That's vivid visualization at its finest. They are so vivid. And all of you, almost every one of you, and I have the same measurement, it's so vivid. Now, some of you have heard me say this. I just want to reach into this camera tonight and into this microphone tonight and set this ground rule. It is so vivid that we can't play around with this gift. And it's a gift. We don't get the luxury of escaping and avoiding life and going off into the future and fantasizing about what it's going to be like when we're rich. We don't get that luxury, because if we don't use this vivid visualization constructively, it will destroy us. You see, it's so vivid that when we're in this space in our mind, the same brain chemistry and the brain circuitry that would occur if we were actually in that place experiencing it in tangible reality, that same brain circuitry, brain chemistry is occurring. This is critical. If we're in the wrong place, doing something destructive with this gift, it is going to set us up for hell on earth. And many of you know precisely what I'm talking about. When someone says to us, create a dream board. Now, I happen to think that's a great idea, to get clear on what it is we want to have in our life. Now, quite often, those things turn out to be just material possessions. I've had a lot of them. They don't fill the hole in your soul. What fills the hole in your soul is what's sitting next to me, Ramona, our children, having having a son admitted to a hospital yesterday and just canceling the day and spending the afternoon with him and then being with him last night and feeling the love we feel for a child. To be able to have grandchildren here yesterday afternoon, be able to just play with them, hold them at the hospital last night, sharing a taco at 10 o'clock at night. How fun is that? These things matter. So if you're going to create a dream board, make sure that what you put on it will actually fill that peace in your soul that you want so badly to fill. Then, make sure that your dream board is a target. In other words, this is where I would like to be. This is why I do what I do each day. This is why I'm disciplined and structured, and I do the hard things when the hard things are required, because I am intentionally, physically bringing that vision into tangible reality. I'm manifesting it through my effort. The risk is that with this thought process, shared by almost everyone on the phone tonight, the desire is to skip past all of that and go to a time when it's already happened and then vividly visualize what it will be like then. Oh my goodness, when we engage in escape and avoid fantasy, we know that brain chemistry is occurring, and part of that brain chemistry is the release through the sympathetic nervous system of the drug norepinephrine. Norepinephrine is a very powerful drug. If it were prescribed, it would be a controlled substance. Be like the morphine they put my son on yesterday, because he's in such pain. It's very powerful, and it makes us feel so good. For example, if we use this vivid visualization to go to a time in the future when we have no more debt and no more stress and no more pain and time freedom and financial freedom. Oh, can you just feel it? Oh, yes. And we begin to imagine what it would be like to have $10,000 a month, and that's not quite enough, then 20, and that's not quite enough, then 30, and 40, and 50, and 60. And 92% with this measurement is $100,000 a month. That's the number. That's the amount they've dared to imagine. Some go to $1 million, but it's $100,000 a month. That seems to just about cover everything when they get there that they're going to want to be able to purchase. And we've got norepinephrine coursing through our bodies. It feels so good. But oh my goodness, we are creating in our mind one of the most deadly things that can be created. It's called a mental construct. We're constructing this reality. Now some people say, well, create the reality and then, no. I'll share with you in a few moments how to do this. But if you escape to it, create it, and then live in it, here's the risk. Not only have we created the brain chemistry and brain circuitry and created the mental construct, rule number two, this part of our brain functions dualistically. Kind of a big word, but write it down, dualistically. Dualistically means that when that mental construct is built, and it will be built, that expectation, etymologically, the history of that word, we break it down, expectation, concrete condition for happiness. You might want to put that on a piece of paper, expectation. It might be easier to understand than a mental construct, an expectation. It's dualistic, which means all, precisely as you have seen it, or nothing. I'm alive if I have it. I feel dead if I don't. Life or death. All or nothing. This thought process is like polarization. All or nothing. There's nothing in between. There's no gradation. There's no compromise. Now, you can step back and compromise. It cannot. And when the mental construct is completed, here's the challenge. Rule number 3. Write the word down. Autonomic. A-U-T-O. Auto. N-A. Autonomic. Autonomic. A-U-T-O. N-O-M-I-C, I think. Autonomic. You cannot control what is about to happen. Now, if you're watching the video, do this with me. You'll be able to see me do it. If you're on the phone, just do this by yourself. I want you to stop blinking your eyes. Okay, I'm stopping my eyes from blinking. I'm holding on. Oh, they're starting to burn. How are yours? Are yours burning? Oh, I have to blink. Ugh. Well, blinking is automatic. We don't have to think about blinking. Our eyes blink. It keeps everything lubricated. We can consciously stop it for a period of time. That's automatic. Autonomic is something you cannot stop. You can't stop it. It's going to happen whether you want it to or not. When we have escaped into the future to a time when, and we're trying to live beyond it, we know the same brain chemistry, brain circuitry is fired that would fire if we're there. We've created this expectation. To compound it, I keep coming back to this word ease. You've heard me talk about it before. We want a life of ease. That's why we're skipping past all the work. We don't want this. I don't want to have to do this. This is hard. I just want that. I want that, and I want that right now. Now, you and I could step back and be more rational than that, but that's how this part of our mind is functioning. Now, the autonomic response is this. Within the next few hours after having gone there, life, some part of it, is going to show up differently. Just will. Maybe one of your children gets upset or sick, or you get a credit card bill in the mail, or somebody yells at us, or if you're in business, a customer leaves you, or somebody's upset with something you've done. The instant life shows up 0.001% different than that expectation, it triggers this autonomic response. Because it is so real to the mind, the body is now going to get engaged in a process of protecting it. Yes, it's been threatened. In the minute, and life always shows up a whole lot different than fantasy. But even if it's just a fraction, it's going to autonomically occur. And when it occurs, the body, the sympathetic nervous system that was releasing the norepinephrine that made us feel so good, goes into a process of releasing something that's just the antithesis of, the total opposite of norepinephrine. It's called cortisol. Now, cortisol is released in the body naturally when we are threatened, like something like a bear, or we have a terrible automobile accident. It's to speed up metabolism, gives lots of energy, and to heal wounds. Except for there is no accident. There's no bear. There's no rattlesnake. It's just reality attacking a fantasy. And so all of a sudden we get that lightning bolt in our gut because that happens to be a part of our body, our shoulders. These are areas with a lot of cell receptors for cortisol. And the cortisol communicates kind of a stressful feeling in our body. So our body is feeling uncomfortable. Now we compound this autonomic response by going up to the bottom of the brainstem, to this almond-shaped organ called the amygdala, our fight-or-flight center. and is now preparing the brain so that we can, with all of our physical capacity, flee or fight. How does it do that? It goes up into all the energy-rich areas of the brain, like right behind our forehead, our prefrontal cortex, where our empathy resides, our ability to connect with other people, our common sense. And it shuts off all the electricity, these little fear dendrites. It's like an army. Their whole job is to go turn out light switches. So they're just turning light switches out all over the brain. The hippocampus, which is where our short-term memory resides, to protect what's in there, the door's shut. It's like a vault. Handle spins, locked down. Nothing in, nothing out. Our short-term memory starts to be impaired. We are now prepared. The brain has centralized all of its metabolic energy into the fight-or-flight center. We're not using our memory. It's been shut down. Our body feels anxious. And now we're at emotional low. It's a form of depression. I'm not a clinician, so I have to be careful in using that word in terms of clinical depression. But in terms of just common vernacular, we feel depressed. It's discouraging. We find ourselves in what I would call the dungeon of despair and discouragement. It's dark. It's awful. This is not a good time to get up and do what's necessary to create our dreams in tangible reality. Sometimes we're forced to, and that's why it hurts. It's burdensome. It's boring. It's mundane. It's repetitious. It's awful. So what do? Well, many of us, wanting a life that's not so painful, go back pursuing that place where there's no stress and no pain and no frustration, no debt, no time constraints or financial constraints. And the only place we can find that is in our mind. So we skip past all the work back into the future to a time when that has occurred, and we begin to vividly visualize it again, and we start the cycle all over again. Norepinephrine high, we feel so good. Within 24 hours, cortisol driven low, and we feel awful. Tonight, more so than ever before, for those who are still with us on many of these calls and those who are visiting with us, just want to make sure this is so clear. Now, somebody may say, well, Dave, isn't vivid visualization good? And absolutely essential, a critical part of creation. But when we bring the elements of going to a time in the future, escaping to a time when, then living what it'll be like then, we add to that an intention where we want it to be easier. This is just too hard. I want it to be less stressful and painful and frustrating and no more debt. Time freedom, financial freedom. We add that piece. We add the vividness with which this can be done, same brain circuitry, brain chemistry. And we create the mental construct, that expectation, that concrete condition for happiness, and the autonomic response when life shows up even a fraction of a percent different. It's all, or it is nothing. We add those pieces together, and we start to begin to understand why dream boards, which can be our support, our reference point, our target, turn absolutely into poison because they become a daily destination, a place we go to instead of a place we're headed to. So somebody asks again, what about dream boards? And my response is, depends on how you use them. If you're putting Ferraris on there and big sailboats and houses and all kinds of things that represent ease, and then you go to these and visit them vividly on a regular basis, probably the worst thing you could do. One of the great impediments to the creation of your very dreams, because you'll spend a tremendous amount of time skipping, avoiding, going to, escaping, and then living in what we call imagined catastrophe, that dungeon of despair and discouragement. These are very destructive uses of a very powerful and wonderful gift. I'd like to spend the rest of our night talking about constructive ways to use this gift. What can we do with it to speed up creation? You see, there's no magic in the sense that if I vividly visualize it with enough intention, there's going to be a fantasy fairy that somehow magically manifests my wishes. Won't happen. If we're sitting in an easy chair waiting for a Lamborghini to appear in the garage, you're going to be in your easy chair for the rest of your life, terribly disappointed. Now, can you sit in your easy chair and get really clear? And the answer is absolutely yes. Because there are five ways you can use your mind constructively. As I shared early on, that when we use it constructively to get a clear vision, it ignites our passion, part of our brain we normally don't use. A willingness to come into tangible reality and do whatever is necessary to create that here. There's a power that participates in the inspired idea. That power also participates in the physical creation, speeding the entire process up as fast as it can occur. Absolutely as fast as it can occur. And we can spend time in resistance and rebellion to this process, or we can finally embrace it. I'm going to invite you tonight to embrace it. First principle. The reason why we talked the last 2 weeks about the art of connection with people was for us to shift our focus from ourself to others, using those painful experiences in our lives as reference points, so that we can better understand what someone else might be experiencing. Step into the world more effectively. Have questions float to the surface from our own experience that we can ask, to drive that conversation deeper and richer, creating an increasingly safer place where there's no need for a wall. Wall comes down, cooperation, productivity floods out to us. The operative portion of that is that we shift our focus from self to others. When we engage in destructive thought, at the foundation of that thought, I'm going to say this, and I want to wrap my arms around you because this is going to sting for some, but it's a very selfish desire to skip past all the pain in life. I just want to buy a tropical island, Dave, and tell the world to go to heck in a handbasket. I'm sick and tired of people. The desire for ease is a desire to avoid. At the core of constructive thought is a different desire. There's actually a few words, I'll give them to you. One is engage. We don't want to avoid anything. We want to engage. And it's not that we're choosing to do something that doesn't make sense or isn't appropriate. Well, Dave, I don't like these obstacles. Why does Og tell me to embrace the obstacles? Well, because they're part of engaging. They're part of life. We can resist them. We can resent them. We can be ticked off by them, fantasize to escape them. They're still going to be right there in front of us when we come back. It's part of the deal. And intentional creators learn to embrace them, learn from them, overcome them quickly, and move forward to the next thing. The sooner we surrender to this learning process of engagement, the quicker we overcome. So number one is we want to engage in life. We are going to choose tonight to live. We want to live. We want to engage in this thing called life. Number two, embrace. We want to embrace principles. We don't want to fight principles. We want to embrace them. Just teach them to me and I'll do them. It's not in our nature as entrepreneurs. We're a little rebellious, a little resistant. And we can be resentful when it doesn't work out the way we want it to. We're going to embrace principles. We're going to learn how to do these things and then do them. 3, connection. It's no longer about us. It's about others. We strive to connect and serve. Connect and serve. 3, somebody going, oh, I just want to go to the tropical island, David. That's a lot easier. Well, wouldn't it be interesting if we could actually do it? The truth is that ease thing that everyone's been trying to sell doesn't exist on this planet. I know some really wealthy people. Got a friend who just sold his business and is building a 50,000 square foot house 2 blocks from here. 2 indoor swimming pools. He'd be the first to tell you it's not easy. There's no such place. Could be interesting if there were, but there is no such place. So if we keep trying to go down the easy road, we're just always going to be frustrated. To compare that with, well, Dave, you want me to engage? I want you to want to engage. I want you to want to embrace principles. And I want you to make this about others. Because I know the joy you seek will not come in self-centric pursuits. Been down that road. Learned that one the hard way. It's time for us to make it about others so that that hole in our soul can begin to be filled. 4, create value. Create value. Not just create money. Create value for the money. We get paid well. Everybody wants to be paid well for what they do. Then create value. And lastly, with that wealth, contribute to the world. Imagine waking up every morning wanting not to escape, and no more stress, and no more pain, and no more frustration, wanting something that does not exist on this planet. Instead, choosing to engage in life today. I'm going to make this the greatest day of my life. I'm going to pick up one of Og's scrolls. I'm going to read it, and I'm going to embrace these principles of mental creation. I'm going to step into people's worlds and connect and serve. I'm going to create value everywhere I go. I want to contribute to the world. Now imagine going into this place in your mind, a vivid visualization with that intention. Imagine. Can you feel the energy going there, seeking inspired ideas and impressions and solutions to problems? Do you think when you show up like that, that power in the universe, that force of creation, that which I call God, will answer that prayer? And the answer is absolutely yes. That's a prayer that can be answered. An inspired idea. We get an impression. Lights up our passion, we act on it. And it's validated over and over and over again. I just was writing this in a book. But we lost millions of dollars. We're spending 10 years paying it back, and 2 years into that process, our life got worse than it was when we lost the money. It just got as awful as it can be. And I almost lost sight of this. Now, let's walk through some specifics. I just know that your gift to vividly visualize is a gift. The very first thing we want to do with it is use it to mentally create using mental rehearsal. That's kind of what a fantasy is, except for you're there with a desire that's counterproductive to everything the force in the universe will respond to. That force wants you to become a creator. Do something with your life that's meaningful. Make it matter. And we want to escape and avoid and be a wallflower and turn into a grain of sand instead of grow into a mountain. Never happen. But we show up in mental creation. It is as vivid as fantasy. I'd love to be able to call it fantasy because everybody would get what I'm saying. It is the same process, but with a different desire. Everybody got that? Exact same process, but with a different desire. You go onto the stage of your mind, you can drive a Ferrari and just have a wonderful life and a big house and you know, on and on and on and on and on. Now go to this place called mental rehearsal and don't go too far in the future initially. Just pick the next really important event in your life. What's the next event? Do you have a meeting coming up in the next couple of days? Important one? Presentation? Meeting with a prospect? Meeting with a boss? Important. Just pick that event. Write it down on a piece of paper. What is it? In the next 2 or 3 days, maybe next week, what is the most important thing coming in your life? Someone might say, well, it's this weekend as a holiday with my family. Well, pick that one. Now, I'm closing my eyes. I'm going into the future. For example, this weekend, we're leaving on Friday. We've got the family all coming up, and we're going to spend the day up at the cabin, and we're going to decorate graves, and I could start mentally rehearsing what's going to happen during the course of that time, and I start thinking, how am I going to show up for my children? And I start pondering a child sitting in the living room talking to Catherine. Does that power in the universe know what Catherine needs? If I ponder Catherine, will I be guided to an idea? If I get one, it's going to light up part of my brain I normally don't use. It's going to inspire me to do something different with Catherine. How about with a grandchild? If I sat here and mentally rehearsed and said, who's in need? And I see little Jessica, or I see Evan, or I see one of these children, grandchildren, I see them. And I start to get an idea, an impression. This is like a fantasy in that it's just as vivid. And I'm just as excited as I would be with the Ferrari, but now I'm doing something that has to do with engaging in life and embracing principles and connecting and serving people and creating value and bringing and contributing to the world. That's where my mindset is, so I'm focused on how to create something of tremendous value. I get an idea. I share one in the material. I'll tell it to you briefly. I was coaching with a woman down in Texas, just a sweetheart. And she happened to be a black woman. And she said to me, Dave, do you know how difficult it is to be a black woman amongst the white power brokers in Texas? And I said, I really don't know. Please share with me. So she shared. And I said, what's coming up? And she said, I've got a really tough meeting coming up this week. She was a vice president of a company, and she was in the middle of a dispute between two clients, a hotel and a charity. She brought them together in this facility, and she was responsible for creating this event. Challenge. There wasn't clarity between the client and the hotel about who was going to pay the bar tab. The charity thought it was donated. The hotel certainly wasn't excited about donating all that liquor. This is after the fact. And she was very frustrated because they were all looking at her. Blaming her. And she was very defensive. into this building because she was going to meet with them on other grounds in her office. Said, I can see you walking into the building. And I was mentally rehearsing with her, and I said, I can see you carrying a brown paper sack. And if you want to have some fun with me, just do this with me. Imagine her walking into the building. She's carrying a brown paper sack. There are going to be three people in the meeting. What's in the sack? What do you see? I saw three light switches. Sound kind of silly? I saw her walking into the meeting and handing each person a light switch and saying, okay, I'm on the hot seat. If I say something you don't like, just flip the switch and you can fry me. But ask her what she saw. And she said, I see three tomatoes. I said, oh, three tomatoes? Tell me about the tomatoes. She says, I can see myself sitting down at the meeting and handing each person a tomato and telling them, if you don't like what I'm saying, just throw the tomato at me. And we laughed. Oh, it was so funny. I said, okay, brown sack, three tomatoes. Now you're going in the elevator. You're going up. You're walking into the room. Now I want you to sit down and step into each person's world. Well, pick one. So we picked one. She stepped into their world vividly. What do you know about them? What's their day been like? You know, it's like, am I making this stuff up, Dave? And I said, no, just be open. Let that power, that force of creation, reveal to you, manifest. Everybody loves that word. Manifest some impressions. Get a feel for where they might be. What's going on in their business? What's got them concerned? What are the things that are happening in their life? Again, am I making this stuff up? No. Not any more than we make up driving a car or living in a house. Can't go to the next person. We did. And the next person. By the time she had those impressions, she was excited to go to the meeting. Different energy. Totally different energy. I couldn't wait for the next coaching session to get her report. And her report went something like this. I went by the store and got the brown paper sack and the three tomatoes, and I carried them into the meeting. I set them down by the side of my chair, and then I stepped into each person's world and found out where they were on the topic. I said, what happened? She said, everybody's walls came down. We had the most delightful conversation. Problem was solved. I said, what happened to the tomatoes? She said, I took them home. Didn't need them. I said, does that make you feel like your mental rehearsal was inaccurate because you saw tomatoes in the sack and didn't use them? Our conclusion was very simple. She got an inspired idea that helped put her mind at rest, helped prepare her to show up in a different way. Now, she's shown up in meetings like that the other way. She told me that. This was different. She had learned that what happens in that kind of a meeting is quite often a direct result of how she chose to show up. And sense has shown up differently and created similar results. So pick an event in the future. 2 or 3 days from now, a week from now. Vividly, mentally rehearse. Step into the world of the people involved. Get inspired ideas and impressions. Now, you'll feel them when they come. They'll light you up. You get excited. You can't wait to go do it. Try it. See what it's like. Will every one of them be perfect? No. They're not scripted. These are just ideas to help prepare you to more effectively engage in life, embrace principles, connect and serve, create value, and contribute to the world. That's what the impressions are for, is to help you do that increasingly effectively. It's mental rehearsal. As vivid as fantasy, just a totally different intention. Now, a longer version of that would be called goal setting. Planning and goal setting. We're going to spend all next week walking through how to vividly visualize something in the future, quite a ways away, a year from now, 5 years from now, 20 years from now, getting a clear vision then working our way back to today so that we know why we're doing what we're doing today. We know why this is the activity for the day, for this week, for this month. So we're living on purpose. That's like fantasy, too. It's as vivid. It's exciting. Except for we're not trying to escape. We're not trying to avoid. We're not looking for a life of ease. We're not trying to get away from these ornery, awful people. We're going to plan and goal set, wanting to engage in life and embrace principles, connect and serve, create value and contribute to the world. And all of a sudden, you'll have an idea of what you're supposed to be doing with your life. How exciting is this? So we're going to do all that next week. Now, just a couple more in the few minutes we have. This is a fun one. This is my favorite. I don't think there are very many days go by that this doesn't happen. It's called inspiration. Now, here you are sitting in life. Okay? And just imagine to your left-hand side, there's this big hole in the ground. It's like a vacuum. Every once in a while, it just turns on with even increased horsepower. We're driving along in life, and all of a sudden, the road starts to tilt. It's like it's got ice, and it wants to slide right down into that dark place, that dungeon of despair and discouragement. Anybody had that feeling? Anybody been in that dungeon in the last 24 hours, last week? Oh, that's so debilitating. When we go there, we get that cortisol surge. And, oh, just awful feelings. We get in those cycles of worst-case scenarios, and vividly we can visualize how awful it's going to be. This is what Og talks about in Scroll 5, that I don't want to torment myself over things that may never come to pass. Well, here's a technique to help you. Simple one. Simple. But I find it very effective, and I do this probably several times a day. I got a lot going on in our life, and it's not always pleasant. And sometimes the road starts to tip, and I start to slide, and I hold out my left hand like a tomahawk. Everybody see this? And I say these words, and you can say them with me. Not going there today. Not going there. I am staying in creation. Repeat it with me. Not going there today. I am staying in creation. One more time, and you'll start to feel what it's like for me sometimes. Not going there today. I am staying in creation. Can you feel the intention? Well, the first thing is mental rehearsal. I'm going to stay in mental rehearsal. I'm going to pick something in the future. Sometimes that's a hard one to do. When that dark dungeon of despair and discouragement keeps wanting to suck us in. Here's one that's a little easier. It's called inspiration. And we stay in creation by reflecting on names. Everybody we went to high school with or college with or belongs to our church or community or that we're in business with, anybody we've ever known, neighbors, we just start thinking about names. Somebody says, gosh, are you wasting all this time? And I'm thinking, I could stop this and go right into something else. I spend 10 minutes over there in that dark dungeon, and I'm done for 10 hours. I am mentally impaired. Part of my brain's been shut down. My hippocampus has been closed. My body's full of cortisol. It's going to take a while for all of that to drain off. 10 minutes there, 10 hours to get this cleaned up. I can spend 10 minutes here, go right to something else and be fine. So just spending time thinking about these names. I'm seeking inspiration. The inspiration you're seeking is this. Just write this down. If there is anyone I can serve, put them on my path, and I will serve them. If there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path, and I will serve them. Anyone I can serve, based on my unique life experiences, which I've chosen to own, and and to use in the service of others. Put them on my path, and I'll use my experience to serve them. I will. And in this mental creation where you're trying to avoid going in that dark dungeon, I'm thinking about names, seeking guidance. Who could use my experience? Just do it till a name comes into your mind. Ah, trust it. Call them. Drop by and see them. This is what it sounds like. John, this morning I was under a lot of pressure. And I was kind of threatened to get discouraged. And I said, I'm not going to go there. I started asking, if there's anyone I can serve, put them on my path and I'll serve them. With tremendous intention, I wanted to find someone I could serve. So I started thinking about everyone I know. And I kept coming back to your name. No, we didn't lose the landline. Those of you watching, you know I'm still here. Are you okay? Silence will be your greatest gift. Everybody's got up a wall, that facade that we're okay, dragging around the sack of all their pain. And somebody finally cared to stop and say, are you okay? Not the kind we ask everybody in public. You okay? Yeah, great. Yeah, how are you doing? Fine. I'm doing fine too. Are you okay? Your name's been on my heart. Silence. You can almost feel them asking, do I really dare speak the truth? Is this a safe place? I've often heard these words. Are you sure you want to know? I'm just here to serve. Some of the most precious experiences I've had as a coach have come in these moments. And often, because I felt that impression and I know its source, when we're done, I can with great confidence say to that person, isn't it good to know that God knows your name? What do you mean? I called. He told me to. Now, if you don't believe in God, you believe in the power of the universe, call whatever you want. Isn't it great the universe knows you? You matter. You matter. When we get to self-esteem here in a few weeks, we'll discover that this is one of the great ways to heal self-esteem, not just theirs, but yours. Because for them to matter, you had to matter. There's a power that had to trust you and was willing to, because instead of spending your day in that dungeon of despair and discouragement, you chose to show up, engaged in life, embracing principles, wanting to connect and serve and create value and contribute to the world. You are a willing servant. And you were given an inspired idea or an impression. And you chose to act on it. And the more times you do, the greater the impressions. I just know that even when impressions come, there can be dark enough nights that we can doubt our own impressions. I wrote in the book, oh my goodness, I started to doubt that we were supposed to move from California to Utah. I began to doubt that I was supposed to spend those 2 years writing and writing and writing, sometimes 8 and 10 hours a day, sometimes 6 days a week, writing those 4 feature film scripts between 1990 and 1992. I started to doubt whether or not I was supposed to be that transparent and that proactive with those $1 million in creditors. I discovered only a couple weeks later that it was not only important, it was imperative, because everything that happened happened because there was a strong impression and it was trusted. This is a great place to start. This is the easiest one to use. one more very quickly. Exploration. Exploration is exploring possibilities. I had a client that sent me an email. I called him back after, and he said, I was mentally rehearsing a situation. I saw a man, 1 o'clock in the morning, pacing the floor. This is very vivid, but he was a very vivid visualizer. Guy's crying. I realize he's lost his job. His wife comes out. He turns so she doesn't see him crying. Coming to bed, sweetheart? I'll be there soon. She leaves. He sits down. Doesn't know what to do. Finances are in terrible shape. He gets the impression to go to the computer. Turns it on. Goes to Sam's Craigslist, and starts going through the ads, and one of them catches his attention. And he starts to write down a phone number, and the guy wakes up kind of from his vivid visualization, comes out of it, and realizes the man was reading his ad, and he doesn't know what it says. What did it say? So he went into exploration, which was writing ads. He started writing ads. The requirement was he wanted to explore possible ways of writing an ad, because he knew that the ad would need to reach the man who was pacing the floor at 1 o'clock in the morning in tears. And he wrote, and he wrote. And he got more and more real, and more and more real, and more and more real. And he finally got the ad. He said, that's it. And he placed that ad. Now, somebody blackballed it and shut it off in a couple of hours, but he got 35 qualified leads for his business. And he knew that those people had been in a situation very similar to the person he saw when he was mentally rehearsing. He got an inspired idea, then he explored possibilities before he made a tangible commitment. It was like he was running the ad over and over and over again. That one, well, that won't work. That one won't work. That one will work. And it did. Saved him a lot of time because the one he sent worked. So mental rehearsal, inspiration, exploration. Try those three this week. And next week, come back prepared. We're gonna go into goal setting, and hopefully differently than we've ever discussed before, to get really clear. Because we can talk about it, but we want to know how to actually do it and then implement it, so that we can take the gift we have to vividly visualize that we most likely, if you're like the normal person, has been using to escape into the future, maybe not knowing any better, wondering, why is this not happening? What's wrong with me? Does God not love me? Am I broken? Am I sick? Am I wrong? No. You've just been using your gift in a way that the power, the force of creation, cannot answer. I'll close with this, and I've said it many times because I remember that darkest night. I was angry. In the chapter in the book, I finally shared what had happened the night before. I won't share it tonight, but it had taken me to the edge. And I cried out to God. I longed to cry to the God of my youth, but the God of my youth will not hear my cry. I must change my God or change my cry. That night I began to learn that I was asking questions that could not be answered. My vivid visualization was around catastrophe and fantasy. And that night I began to be taught the very things I'm now teaching you. Mental rehearsal. Exploration, inspiration. These aren't necessarily new concepts. It's just a clear understanding of why vivid visualization must be used constructively for it to manifest an idea that ignites our passion, and passion that will drive our action to do the second half of the creation. Next week's goal setting, the week after that, we're going to talk about how to bring that passion into the now and have that same power participate in the physical creation to speed it up. We'll do that. But this week, not going there today. I'm not going to go into fantasy. I'm not going to go into catastrophe. I'm going to stay in creation. Mental rehearsal, those short-term visualizations. Inspiration, is there anyone I can serve? Put them on my path and I'll serve them. And exploration, exploring possibilities before we make tangible commitments. Next week, we'll take on goal setting. Now, to assist you this week, I want you to read scroll number 8. Because Og says, I have three options. He compares us to a grain of wheat. I can be put in a sack, fed to the swine. That's fantasy. We're just putting ourselves in a sack and being fed to swine. We are being destroyed. I can be ground into flour, option 2, made into bread, broken open, devoured by the will of others. Or I can be planted in the darkness of the soil, which means I'm going to use my life experiences. I'm going to nurture my mind and my soul. Suck seed comes from suckering a seed. I'm going to be planted in the darkness of the soil, that rich, dark soil. Humus, as Kevin Hall talks about in the word humility, be planted in that dark soil, and I'm going to break out and grow through that dark soil, and as Og says, sprout into 100 grains of wheat. I must have objectives before my life will crystallize, he says. And next week we're going to talk about how to create those objectives so your life will crystallize, so there'll be purpose in all that you do, and so that you can more effectively use your gift to vividly visualize in a way that will serve you in creating, intentionally creating your dreams. So scroll number 8 this week, 3 times a day. Come back next week prepared to take on goal setting. Just want to share our love with you. I was listening to one of Og's speeches today, just deeply moved by the tenderness of his heart. When you read these scrolls, just know where this came from and his deep desire for you to find the answers to these questions and experience the abundance you so richly deserve. Well, thanks, everyone.